Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Last night, the Warriors and the Giants both forgot to finish off the games that they were winning. They ended up losing. The Warriors, again, they'll be back at home and staying home for the final six games of the year. The Giants are going to be coming back home, probably getting to that Denver airport within the hour and hopping on a flight to get back. They lose their last game today at Coors Field. 6-5, I believe, is your final from Coors Field. Giants couldn't get it done today, so they're about to come home, and when they do get home, the Giants are going to be here for five games. They've got three against the Padres, two games against the Rangers, who are bad. Then they got an eight-game road trip that's going to bring them four through Pittsburgh, four through Cincinnati. The Rangers, the Pirates, the Reds are all bad baseball teams. The Giants just, you know, they're going to have three in a row with the Padres, which we all know is a big test, but after that, they got some winnable series coming up. So a good start for the Giants could stay right there. The A's will be back at it trying against the Blue Jays tonight for to win four in a row. And we'll see if they can keep their streak now going. But Warriors, again, there is something that correlates to the criticism of them not having a full complement of players that only rears its head when they lose, Ray. I'll admit that I fall into that trap as well. You don't see the players that they don't have when they win. But, boy, they stand out like a sore thumb when they lose.
Yeah, and it was good that Anthony clarified what we're looking at, which is it's a money decision, which is why Steve Kerr trying to dress it up is just a duty dance. He has to do that. So I think we can exempt him and Myers from the right now. What you can do, though, is look at Myers and go, what happened 2 months ago? Where was the missed opportunity then? Did you think you could get away with this? And I don't think that I think their response would be, we thought James Wiseman was going to be active and playing every night. Well,
That was, you're asking me a question that you weren't going to ask me until Kelly Oubre Jr. hurt his wrist, is one of their answers to, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but the thing is, the only disturbing thing about it is, for me, ultimately, is that this was a team that thrived on depth, and they came into this season a thin team. You know, I mean, yeah, they were unlucky when Chris got hurt. But, you know, you can't pin an average season on that. The fact is, I think they're probably overachieving a bit, given the roster they walked into this season with. I think there were a lot of people who had pipe dreams about being a 6 seed or even a 5 seed. No, this is who they are, and this is where they are. And the fact is, right now they're an 8, which is not that far away. So for all the hand-wringing and gnashing of teeth, they're probably meeting expectations in a very weird way.
We know that we grade them on a little bit of an unfair curve based on what we saw, who Steph Curry is, what we've become accustomed to around here. But yeah, they probably have found their own level in this league, and the chances of them being much better this year were really washed away when Klay Thompson tore his Achilles 5 minutes before they drafted James Wiseman, who didn't exactly work out the way that they had hoped either.
Yeah, I think there's a thing where people burn with optimism's flame about this team based on what happened 2 years ago. Well, now the odometer's reset, and they've had a year where they had no chance, and now a year where they're very much a league average team, again, in an unusual way, because they have one guy making them league average. Two, if you want to count Green, and I will even allow for Wiggins based on his defense, because when we were talking earlier, I was thinking more of him offensively, where some nights he's just not involved. But he has become a much better than league average defender, and even the metrics show that. He's like the 32nd best defensive win share number in the league, which you never would have imagined with him. So in that way, they're trying to be a team with 2.5 players, and they're getting the results that a team with 2.5 players has. I mean, they're a 500 team with this. And I don't know that you should be excited about it, but I also don't think you should be offended by it.
Right. If you were willing to be really honest about how hard it is to be a 500 team with 2.5 real NBA players getting it done for you night in, night out, kind of impressive.
No, not impressive. That's giving them too much credit, but it's well within league norms for that sort of roster setup, and you should be at least okay with it.
How about this?
You shouldn't be impressed by this, because it's still a team that is way too erratic, even with Stephen Curry having a year that he'll never have again.
What if I replace the word impressive with acceptable? It's kind of acceptable.
Tolerable.
Tolerable. Isn't acceptance and tolerance too, the same thing?
No, I think tolerance is a little less than acceptable. Tolerance to me, and we're arguing semantics now, but tolerable is sort of like, well, yeah, my kid broke a vase, but he at least tried to mop up the water. Because this is not a good team by any stretch. And it has taken Stephen Curry becoming Stephen Curry times 1.8 to keep them where they are. I mean, if for some reason he went down.
they're not winning another game.
Yeah, they'd be 12-60. That's how bad they would have been.
Hey, look.
But the fact that
they were 15 in whatever they were last year without him.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they're 33-33, the fact that they're going to be in the play-in game, I think that was about the most rational way to look at them. And they've done that. They haven't done it in an orthodox way in any event. Curry has had to leave his envelope to play sort of the ball dominant guard he never really liked being, to make that happen. And Draymond Green had to hide his offensive deficiencies by being an even better passer than he used to be and an on-point defender night in and night out for them to be there. So I think the big takeaway from this year will be, how do you fix spots 7 through 12, because you got nothing from them this year.
Yeah. No, they really have gotten – I don't know if they've gotten more past 4 at any point in time this year. So, yeah, you're right. They got an awful lot to work on. This is the polar opposite of strength in numbers. This is like a weakness in absence.
Yeah. Strength in number.
Yeah. Strength in that guy. Steve Kerr, who's been hoping for, trying to predict a better brand, a steadier, more dependable brand of basketball for the Warriors to reveal itself, probably hasn't seen what he was hoping for, but he does see the schedule finally breaking their way, and he thinks they're actually well-positioned.
We're in a good spot. We got 6 straight home games to end the season. No more getting on a plane. Some fans in our building. We're in a great spot, so we got to take advantage of this stretch.
Again, I don't know if it's a great spot, but it's a good spot. And you got 6 in a row at home. There is something to not having to get on an airplane and sleeping in your own bed and being able to do the things that make you comfortable that I think are good for this team, because every single time they got a moving part, something moves in the wrong direction, it feels like. So little consistency, which they've had so much trouble finding, maybe will reveal itself with the consistency if you get to play 6 in a row at home. Here is Steph Curry on their current situation.
Yeah, we're in a good spot considering how the road trip started. And we've had two good nights. Tonight was a pretty solid night. We just, lost at the end. You know, I keep our spirits high. Six games at home to finish the season is nice. That is kind of a trap, though, where you can let your foot off the gas pedal because you're comfortable being at home, seeing our families. You're in familiar, territory. You got to stay locked in mentally on the task at hand to finish out the season strong. So enjoy being back in the Bay, sleeping in our own beds. But, six games at home, it's not just because we're at Chase and because we now have fans back that we can just show up and win. We talked about that before, too. So got to stay locked in mentally, take advantage of the schedule, finish the season strong.
Yeah, lock it in, stay frosty. And if there's one thing that, yes, Steph, we can all absolutely agree on, is the roll the ball rack out there, we gonna win tonight era of Warrior basketball is over.
Yeah, oh, no, it was over in game six against Toronto.
Yeah.
Basically he said it. I mean, they are not a trustworthy team over a long haul. You might get a great game here and there. You might get an awful game here and there. And I would suspect that the last six games will probably go that way because while, yeah, you're not getting on a plane and, yeah, you're sleeping in your own bed, it's still roughly an empty building. So the advantages of being at home are significantly less than they would be under normal circumstances. So I would assume that they will come out of this having split the last six games. Especially if they're going to play with eight guys. And they end up 36-36, either the 8 seed or the 9 seed. If they're the 8 seed, they can be satisfied, if not pleased. If they're the 9 seed, they can be grumpy, but fortunate they're not 11th.
Yay. Steve Kerr was asked if a 8-man rotation is sustainable at this point in the year.
Well, it doesn't matter if it is or not. It's all you can do is play, with the guys who are here. As I said, I'm really, really proud of the group. I mean, you got guys just putting everything out there on the line night after night. Being so shorthanded, it does put a lot of pressure, on those guys, but it's the way it is. So they've just got to keep going.
I mean, I guess I don't. What would really happen if you gave Alan Smailagic 10 minutes? Is that an automatic 25-0 run in the other direction? I mean, like, is it just a collapse of basketball physics? I mean, does the world stop working if Alan Smailagic is played in a game that matters?
To paraphrase Kyle Shanahan, the world doesn't stop working if Stephen Curry quits. But Alan Smailagic has basically been given an opportunity to show them that he's worth minutes, and he
can't.
I think, and they're giving you the answer that you don't want to hear. It's that if he could play, he would play.
That stinks.
Well, yeah, you know what? And then you get a hip replacement, and then you're planning your funeral, and that's how life goes.
Hey, Mega Millions is up to $345 million yesterday. Anybody hit the Powerball? Anybody hit that Mega Millions?
Don't they do that on Wednesdays?
I think they had a Mega Millions drawing last night. I don't know if anybody hit. I'm not sure when these things happen.
Yeah, I don't know either.
This is Gianna's territory. Gianna was the one who was trying to keep us dripping in multimillionaire dreams thanks to lotteries and Powerball tickets.
Well, I mean, she's a degenerate. Let's be honest.
Well, I have the numbers. Do you want them? Should we give them out to the listeners?
Yeah, give me the numbers. Give me the numbers.
4, 27, 32, 57, 63, and 22 are your winning numbers in case anyone didn't hear last night.
So you're telling me...
In all honesty, anybody who had those numbers would have known about it by now.
Probably do know about it by now. Lots of sports correlation to be found in those numbers. You end on a little Will Clark there.
Bobby Orr.
Yeah, no.
That's about it.
Thank you.
By the way,
yes.
To reaffirm your joy about tonight's hockey game, this was the first regular season game in NHL history, going back to 1917, to feature six fights within the first 5 minutes of the game.
I'm telling you, man, hockey knows how to take care of itself. If you're not going to police a sport, these players will do it. And I'm sure, here's the beautiful thing about professional hockey teams. I'm sure half the guys on both of these rosters are saying to themselves, man, tonight's not a game I want to
go
play.
Guys, shut up. I have breaking news.
Oh, thank you. What's the breaking news?
The winning ticket was sold in St. Louis County. It has yet to be claimed.
St. Louis, Missouri?
Sure. Yeah.
Congratulations, everyone.
It's always there. I'm convinced
really
that every lottery winner ever either came from Arkansas, Missouri, or Eastern Tennessee.
What, are you saying that there's only winning tickets found in trailer parks?
If they are trailer parks. I mean, you saw Ozark.
I actually didn't. Didn't watch Ozark.
I watched four episodes and they lost me.
I heard it's depressing.
It's profoundly depressing because everybody in it is an awful human being.
I figured that'd be right up your alley.
It would be, but you need somebody who is a victim that you can enjoy.
So is that the problem
all
with
it?
There weren't enough victims for you?
Every lousy thing that happened happened to somebody who had it coming.
Right. You wanted something lousy to happen to that person.
Yeah. So you sort of got what you wanted, but you know, you weren't making any traction. Now, a lot of people liked it, but they're morons.
Have you watched the new thing on HBO? The mayor of Easttown or whatever it is, is it Kate Winslet who's doing that? It is the most depressing Pennsylvania Rust Belt show. I mean, like when Matt Steinmetz watched this, it must bring him right home. Matt Steinmetz grew up around these people, these miserable Pennsylvanians. It's just never, never stepping outside of their own high school memories. Oh, it's just so depressing. We watched the first episode. Jillian looked at me. She's like, I am out. I'm out. I was like, okay, there you go.
He grew up around, what was it, Wilkes-Barre, right? That's like middle of the state?
Yeah. Yeah. He's not,
Redding?
Redding?
I think Redding.
Yeah, get Steinmetz on the line.
No. Jesus, God, no.
Let's have Steinmetz talk about high school basketball three-pointers that he made from the corner.
Hey, look, it's time for me to go.
Can I give you one last note on the lottery?
We have to have one last note on the lottery, please.
The winner has 180 days to claim their prize. What's the plan? Like, how do you go about this? Do you go right away? Do you take a couple days to think about, like, plan out going to the store? How do you do that?
I don't give corporate America 5 extra seconds with my money. I'll go there with a tax guy and say, okay, what's my take home after the feds and the state get it? That's the number I want, and I want everything else that I have to pay to be out of my hands. And then I take that money, and then I tell my tax guy, great job. I go to the financial guy and say, I want the lowest risk stuff I can get because I already have more money than I can eat. Don't screw me on this or I'll have you killed.
I'm walking around to my friends, the people who have supported me in my life and were just paying off mortgages. Okay? The circle of love in my life is a great place to be the day I come home with $340 million. That's good.
You're including us, right, Damon, in your circle of mortgages you're going to pay?
Do you have a mortgage?
No, but Ray has one. Maybe you can give me a future one. Lucas, a future one.
No.
No. You
existing
have to have
one
mortgages.
Now. Yeah, it
means
it was a good try.
Yeah. Here's the thing. We're all going to Vegas, baby. We're all going to Vegas. We're even bringing Ray. We're all going.
All right. You went to step two. I went to step one, which is what's the money I actually have as opposed to the money you told me I'm getting?
So the walk away for this price, I believe if you just took the cash only option, was like $220 million still.
Okay, but I want to know what that number is because I don't want to take a check, a big cartoon cardboard check, and then have the tax guy coming yesterday. But by the way, I don't know where you're going to cash that, but we're getting our 140 now.
Right. Yeah. You only take 30% of that home. So good luck, everyone.
Yeah, I want the roadmap before I start throwing money around. And my circle of love, you'll be surprised to learn, is a hell of a lot smaller than yours.
It's tight. It's a tight circle of love.
I mean, I just, one of my two sisters, I'll let them fight it out for which one.
Why did the other one get cut off?
Oh, I don't care which one gets cut off. I want to see them fight for it.
Oh, just one of the, two sisters enter, one sister leaves, Thunderdome.
Yeah, I just want to see, you know, what are you willing to do for this piece of the fortune that I certainly did not earn? and do not deserve.
By the way, do we really have a Mega Millions winner? Because someone on the text line is saying that it's up to $370 million on Friday. So how do we have a winner?
I believe this was a match card. Either way, someone's going to win $1 million from Missouri.
A million dollars. $1 million is that's a nickel. We're talking that's the someone who didn't hit the mega. They just won the lottery. They didn't win the mega lottery. We're talking. You're missing the mega.
That's Friday then. I'll let you know on Friday.
Yeah, I mean that's the kind of world we live in, though. You just won $1 million minus 40%. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Hey, we live in a world where Oprah gave everybody in her audience a car, and I believe like 10 people sued her.
Yeah, because they didn't realize that when you get something like that, that's income.
Yeah, that's a taxable thing.
I know somebody who got on The Price is Right and nearly won a car but didn't, but won some sort of exercise machine. Tax bill came within a month.
For a Bowflex?
Yeah, well, whatever it was. I don't even know. It was an exercise machine, and the government wanted its piece because everything's income. I mean, amazing. I knew a guy who retired, you know, started to take Social Security and was stunned to find out that that's taxed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that gets taxed.
There's
too.
Literally nothing you can have unless you rob a bank and don't report that you robbed it, where you don't get dinged by the government.
I'll tell you what you can have without getting dinged by the government. The largest business in the world, Amazon.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But I regard his tax bill as including all the lawyers that he had to get and accountants to make sure that he didn't pay any taxes.
I don't know.
Even at that, half of it went to the ex.
$370 million, I feel like we should pass the hat. Like, so one person should be in charge going to 7-Eleven and buying some Mega Millions tickets. Look at it this way. We could do that, or we could be resigned to the fact that we're all going to be working
this
together for the rest of our frickin' lives. Do we want to go to 7-Eleven with a dollar and a dream, or do we want to spend the next 25 years looking each other in the face?
Good point. I'm on it.
Yeah. You get the dollar and a dream out there quickly.
Well, it's like Fran Lebowitz once said, your chances of winning are the same whether you play or not.
Thank you, Franny. It's good to see her making a comeback, by the way.
That's a show that has a short shelf life, though, unless you live in New York.
You're right. You really got to love Seinfeld, let's just say,
to
immerse yourself deeply into the Fran Lebowitz experience.
Seinfeld bleached itself in a lot of ways.
So, we've had so much in the last couple of weeks. The interesting baseball that's all around us. We got the Warriors, who are, two steps forward, one step back. Interesting pretty much every single time we look at them. Today we had a boxing match disguised as a hockey game going on at Madison Square Garden to distract us. One of the things that we haven't
Don't forget the no-hitter.
And don't forget the no-hitter from the Baltimore Orioles. First time since Jim Palmer, everybody.
First time by one pitcher. They had a no-hitter out here with four pitchers once.
Those don't count.
Yes. That's why I pointed that out.
One of the things that we have not talked about there's several reasons that we don't talk about it. Number one, we're not doing radio in Austin, Texas. Number two, Texas Longhorns are not topic du jour around here. And number three, I am so tired of looking at sports through the prism of musical outrage. Musical outrage was dripping all over the NFL because of the national anthem and everything that happened. Colin Kaepernick, I'm sure you picked up a paper and you read all about it. You know where that went and what a hot button issue that became. So the Eyes of Texas is the school alma mater that is played after football games and pretty much at like any school event. And the Eyes of Texas, Ray, is a song that, it's got red flags right away when you find out that it came, from a minstrel show, which means racial elements have been dripping over this, period and end of story. It's also set to the tune of I've Been Working on the Railroad. Again, there's a red flag too. But, okay, so without getting anybody's national anthem outrage boiling again, let me just say one of the things that I never really understood about it. Apparently, Ray, there is an element of the Star-Spangled Banner where racially insensitive lyrics are used in a verse that is never taught, never sung, never presented, and is essentially not part of the song. You know, the part that you don't sing is not part of the song. And you could say, well, it was there in the first place, but it's not there anymore. It's like, imagine if at the end of Star Wars or at the end of Jedi, as Darth Vader lay there dying in Luke Skywalker's arms, he turned up and he said, well, actually, I'm not your father. I'm your neighbor. I'm your neighbor, Steve. And I borrowed a lawnmower from your dad once, and I need to give it back to you, Luke. And that's the way Jedi ended. But they never put it in the movie. The movie ends the way that you know it ends. But they filmed that, but they didn't put it in. Are you angry that it exists? I wouldn't be. The thing that's not in the final cut doesn't matter to me. So I never understood the outrage over the anthem because of the verse that has never been taught or sung or recited by anybody. That's just me. If you want to be offended, but you go ahead and you love or be offended by that. And I thought to myself, okay, well, how bad is this Eyes of Texas? Like maybe we have an overzealous student body that is a little too sensitive for its own good. Like the origins of this song are maybe now overshadowed by the reality that many famous black players think that the song has an important place in school history. Earl Campbell, Ricky Williams, several had said this. And I thought maybe there must be a reason why this song, The Eyes of Texas Are Upon You, it must be about go forward. Go be great representatives. Go let the world know what kind of jib people from Texas are cut from. And it's a song of encouragement and empowerment, and it had a place. That's what I assumed, because I never really knew the lyrics. Have you seen the lyrics to The Eyes of Texas?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so there is no doubt where this song comes from. I would like to share with you the lyrics that are sung from The Eyes of Texas, because this isn't one of those... Geez, do you think there might be a little veiled racism in it? The lyrics of Eyes of Texas are basically direct threats to slaves to never run from the plantation.
Yeah, it's not veiled.
Here are the lyrics. The students may have a point. And it's, again, sung to I've been working on the railroad. I will give you my rendition now. The eyes of Texas are upon you all the live long day. Nothing wrong yet.
Well, you're singing, but go ahead.
The eyes of Texas are upon you. You cannot get away. We have our first red flag. We have our first direct threat. It gets worse. Do not think you can escape them at night. Or early in the morn, the eyes of Texas are upon you till Gabriel blows his horn. In other words, your ass is ours until you die.
Yeah.
This is not
veiled. By the way, that's an excellent rendition, except for the fact that other people sing it with a tune.
Thank you. I'm a host, not a singer-songer guy. I'm not a triple threat, right? Yeah,
I just wanted to.
Look, this is... There is nothing overt about that.
Everything's overt.
No, excuse me. Yeah. There's nothing coded is what I'm trying to say here. This is straight up. Okay, and I'm the least politically correct guy in the world. Your lyrics to your song, I get 99% chance they ain't going to offend me. Maybe they offend you, but me, nah. Dude, this is straight up about don't let your slaves out of your sight should be the name of the song.
Yeah. And the fact is, if that was a song that you liked when you were going to the University of Texas 50, 60, 70 years ago, it's not really your university anymore in that other people are going there now and they get to decide what they hear as representatives of that school. And the fact that the students who are basically used as tour guides have said, well, we're not going to do that as long as it's a plaque with the lyrics on it that they want taken down. And they just said, well, we're not going to work as long as that plaque is there. And the university said, well, we're not getting rid of the song, but if you feel uncomfortable, you don't have to work. That's really missing the point, because it's not about filling your quota of tour guides. It's about refusing to recognize that a university, like everything else, is a growing, living thing, that things that were tolerated 50 years ago don't have to be tolerated anymore. You know, the idea that all traditions are sacred is demonstrably false.
Right.
It's, if you have to defend this song, and the lengths to which you will defend it should tell you how bad it is to other people. And if you continue to want to make it the song under which all people who go to UT have to sing, then there are going to be people who don't go to UT anymore. And going back to your thing about the anthem, it's not about the racist parts of the anthem that offend most people. It's the idea, if you choose not to sing it, you get to be branded as unpatriotic or communist or a lousy human being. It's people's reaction to what is basically a relatively meaningless ritual, at least in sports. You know, there's no value to the anthem. Most people are either in the bathroom line, in the beer line, or sitting down and talking to their pals while the anthem's being played. So it doesn't have any value.
The value to the anthem is no more than whatever they're getting for that commercial break. If the anthem were that important, the television broadcast would carry it. It does not. It's covered up to make money.
Exactly. So, you know, how important is it? It's the idea that everybody has to adhere to the same thing. That is what people object to. I mean, you know, if you like The Eyes of Texas, well, then go with your conscience, however decrepit that may be. But to insist that other people have to embrace it is where you go off the rails.
I'll tell you right now, I am predisposed to think that Generation Safe Space is probably a little bit over its own skis with its own political correctness at times. And I really thought that must be what's going on UT's campus. And then I read the lyrics. Wow.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter that Earl Campbell doesn't see the racism in this. Anyone else can.
He probably never listened to the song. It was probably background music for him when he was getting ready for a football game. And I don't want to speak for Earl Campbell, but the fact is, even if Earl Campbell thinks, well, there's nothing wrong with this song. Well, there's nothing wrong with the song to you.
Right.
But, you know, we have a bunch of students who are there now living the thing who say, yeah, this isn't acceptable anymore. Why isn't that good enough?
So at Indiana, when I went on my official tour of the campus for the very, very first time, I remember
the tuition scam.
Yeah, yeah. The tour guide, the woman who brought us around campus, the student who brought us around campus, said something to explain away all of the ugly construction and orange fences that I was seeing and these cranes, which were absolutely in the way of the money shot of campus being beautiful. And she just said simply, hey, I know all this construction is ugly, but it's the best thing you could ever see on campus because it means we're growing. And I thought, wow, that was a really, really good sell job right there. She had somebody gave her that line. She used it. She stuck the landing. And you know what? She's right. That's what this song is under right now. It needs to be put under construction. And in order for Texas to keep on growing, it's time to just pick something else. Like, can't you, if you got to pivot to an old Texas chestnut, like, could we pivot to, like, deep in the heart of Texas? Like, is there something that Willie Nelson could write, being the most famous living Austinite in the world, that could replace this, that wouldn't be rooted in black-faced minstrel shows and direct threats to slaves to never run away? I mean, there's got to be a solution that we can find.
Except that there's not, and here's why. Because it's not about the lyrics, ultimately, to the people who defend it. It's about the ritual.
Right.
And people are rejecting the ritual. And that's what pisses people off. This song was good enough for me. Damn it, it'll be good enough for you. Well, it's not. All right? People are saying it's not. You know, keep the song in your heart. Fine. But other people get to make their choices, too. Because there probably was a song before The Eyes of Texas that was played at the university. And then they came up with this. And I don't know the history of it, but it's the idea that one size must always fit all that gets in the way of every discussion about any kind of social change. What do you mean you have to change that? Well, because it needs to be changed. It's rotten at its core. Well, it wasn't to me, so it's going to have to be good enough for you. I mean, it's the imposition of power and privilege that arguing about song lyrics are. I mean, the fact is the song lyrics have to stand on their own. And if they can't, then the song will collapse on its own. But when you make it mandatory and you lash out at people who don't believe in it, that's when this all goes off the rails.
There will be hills in the coming culture war. Which you will want to plant your flag in and die on. This ain't it.
Tell that to Colin Kaepernick, though. He lost a career over a song that nobody pays attention to. And he lost his career over a message that people mangled deliberately to make it look like he was against America. When in fact, what he was against, when you think about it, is police brutality. He wasn't even against police. He was against police using force to harm people.
You know, I know
that was the message, pure and simple. And they crushed his career as a result.
Here's the thing. They crushed his athletic career, and they launched something that is 1,000 times more impactful and powerful if he plays it correctly for the rest of his life, which is there for him. And he seems to be doing it. And I'm gonna tell you right now, I guarantee you he still lives in the home that he lived in when he was an NFL player, making NFL money. Like, Colin Kaepernick has not been thrown out into some Section 8 housing because he hasn't been able to make ends meet anymore. He is a multimillionaire to this day.
Yeah, but you can't – it's not right to sell away your rights.
Of course not. What happened to him was not right, but yeah, he's okay.
He's okay, but that's sort of not the point. He was going to be okay anyway. And he had established the fact that he was a worthwhile quarterback of the National Football League until people in the right wing of the United States, you know,
politicized,
ginned up by Donald Trump and his, you know, wizards, you know, decided, oh, no, this is a great election piece. And they destroyed his career. I bet you to this day he would say, I know I have a lot of things. My life is not nearly as difficult as a lot of people's. But I still liked football, and I would like to have played it some more. And there was no reason to do it except that somebody needed to use it as a political stalking horse.
Yeah, no, look, he got screwed over. He got screwed over. There is absolutely no doubt about it. The people who are going out of there. Oh, by the way, there's one element of all this that I totally forgot to tell you about. We've got to go to a real quick break, and then we're going to come on back with a What If Wednesday, and who knows what that'll entail.
I do.
But there is a person. There is a person who joined a UT discussion about this song, who showed up in the Zoom chat room wearing a bandana and loading a rifle. And if your whole point is this song is not about intimidation, that's a real funny way to make it, don't you think?
Yeah, it's hilarious. I'm laughing my ass off.
When we come on back, we will ask the What If Wednesday questions that the rest of us might be afraid to ask or not even bother to ask because it's a waste of time. We'll all find out. We'll see what the studio's cooked up for us here in just a moment as we come on back for our final segment. Damon Ratto and Kolsky. No Kolsky this afternoon. We shared the news that his wife has given birth to a healthy, beautiful baby girl, and that's why he's going to be out on a little paternity leave over the next couple weeks. So that was an announcement that we made earlier today. We'll let everyone know about it, and we'll be back for a What If Wednesday next. We're brought to you by Network Capital Funding.
What if I told you hindsight is always 20/20? The Minnesota Timberwolves select Stephen Curry.
That everything happens for a reason.
With the first selection in the 2005 NFL draft, the San Francisco 49ers select Aaron Rodgers, quarterback of California.
What if I told you it's time for What If Wednesday on Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky.
Hey, what if I told you that coming up next, Warriors Live with our good friend Tim Roy, and he's going to have Draymond Green with us. A little Warriors roundtable at the top of the hour. There you go. Oh, bye. Draymond Green coming up tonight. So that should be a really good conversation. In the meantime, it is our last segment on a What If Wednesday, which means what do you got for us?
Okay, we're going to start with sports, and we will get to food and something else a little miscellaneous. Fast forward 5 months or so. The 49ers are playing well, winning games. But Jimmy is just fine, kind of what we've seen from him in the past. How will Kyle Shanahan handle his excitement to get Trey Lance into action, gentlemen?
I don't think that that's where the excitement to get him into action is ever going to come from. I don't think it'll come from anywhere other than he ready. And I don't think a declining Jimmy necessarily means Trey Lance is ready. Hopefully that's not what 3 or 4 or 5 months looks from right now. And Jimmy is winning and looking good because that makes things easy. That makes things smooth. And a year of easy and smooth, it sounds really nice for the 49ers.
Yeah, if they're winning, he can't be doing that badly. He's running the he's running the game plan the way they want him to run it. And even if he's not putting up gaudy numbers, sometimes he doesn't put up gaudy numbers. That's not how you evaluate this guy. And you don't evaluate Trey Lance by how quickly can we get him in. You know, just, he's a long-term thing. Get used to it.
I think that the whole transition from Garoppolo to Trey Lance, it's going to reveal itself to us, and it's going to be so obvious, and there is going to be no mystery. We will know when it's time. We will know when that lever needs to be pulled, and I don't think anybody is going to be reaching for it. Well, I mean, there's going to be some element of the fan base that is looking for a quarterbacking change the first time the Niners take a 3 and out.
Well,
but
yeah.
They're nuts.
Yeah, well, no, they are nuts, and that's why they should be ignored at all costs at all times.
Thank you very much.
I mean, no, the fact is, if you want to ruin this draft pick, be in a hurry to get him in. Be in a hurry to get him in. I mean, just he's got his timeline. Garoppolo's got his timeline. They may not mesh, but all ties are going to go to the incumbent. If they're winning and Garoppolo is okay, he's okay enough to win because he was okay enough to win 2 years ago. And Shanahan was fine with that. Because ultimately, this is not about the glorification of the quarterback position. This is about winning football games and winning a lot of them. If they win a lot of them and Jimmy Garoppolo is ordinary, stay with ordinary because you're winning. And even if that means every game is 17-3, that's fine. You know, stop making this a quarterback thing, which I know is the thing that 49er fans have done since Frankie Albert was a quarterback. They love a controversy. This is not a controversy because it's not about the quarterback. It's about the scoreboard.
Hey,
if they win, they're fine.
If they're winning 17-3 every week, you got a hell of a defense, and that's all you need.
Yeah, and that's what they had 2 years ago. Again, for 49er fans who need this to be about the quarterback, get a hobby. Learn to knit. You know, woodworking, anything.
Lucas.
And if you go to a bar, don't sit next to a stranger and engage him in a conversation on the subject.
Haven't you seen his film, though, Ray? See him on an NFL team?
I don't care if he's done Citizen Kane. He doesn't matter here. The result matters.
You will see him. That's the thing. All I got to do is wait. It's coming. It's coming to Netflix.
Yeah.
Okay, what else you got?
All righty, this is the last What If Wednesday we care about the NFL draft pretty much for a year or so, so we have to hit on this. Gentlemen, have you heard about Mel Kiper Jr.'s eating habits?
No.
Wonderful. Let me fill you in. He talked to ESPN's Pablo Torre about them. Number one, he's obsessed with pumpkin pie. He eats it as much as physically possible. Whenever it's in season, he eats a slice a day for breakfast. But his habits get a little bit weirder. It's how he eats his pizza. He'll order a cheese pizza. Then this
don't
is
give
his
me the
quote.
Don't give me the crust to the tip.
No.
That. Okay.
This is maybe weird. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever heard about how someone eats pizza. This is his quote. I take the cheese off the pizza. I eat the pizza with mashed potatoes. So mashed potatoes and pizza without the cheese on it is what I do. I think I'm healthy because I'm not eating the cheese, right? I don't eat the cheese. I just leave a little on there for the flavor. All right. So it's a little bit odd.
So he eats slices of pizza like a child who has access to mashed potatoes.
But yeah. He still has some cheese. So he's not being dogmatic about his health either.
That's right. So the question is, what if you had to announce your strangest eating habits? What would they be?
Man, I don't even know if I have anything that drifts in the all the way to weird. I really don't. Like, the weirdest I get is I like ketchup on my scrambled eggs.
I wouldn't announce it because, A, it's nobody else's business, and, B, I don't want people to confuse me in any way with Mel Kiper Jr. on any level. The fact that he eats food at all offends me.
I mean, I like mashed potatoes. You can pretty much put mashed potatoes on anything. But who has mashed potatoes at their disposal to top their own pizza with whenever they order a pizza?
It's got to be specific pizzeria, I guess.
I guess so. By the way, mashed potatoes on pizza, like, that's a thing. I've done that. I've seen that. Ooh. But I didn't know that it was the only way Kiper gets down. That's fascinating stuff. We all learned a little something.
And the fact that he told us that very quickly, it just shows you what kind of a narcissist he is. Because nobody wants to know that. You know, have some wisdom about the rest of the universe.
We want to thank Kaylin Kaler for joining us today. She had wisdom for us. She offered it this afternoon. So did Anthony Slater on the Warriors. The wisdom of Tim Kirkjian will never be forgotten.
I have to go put on my Yoda costume as soon as this is over. And the sad part is it fits.
Thanks so much to Lucas and Nash. For Ray, I'm Damon. Stick around because Warriors Roundtable coming up next with our good friend Tim Roy. And he's going to have Draymond Green stopping on by for a chit-chat. So all of that is next. In the meantime, thank you for listening. And please remember that sports don't build character. They reveal it.
And like that,